favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
So I want to enjoy the road,
but
you know?
I'm a little bit of a speed demon.
No, I am. Yeah. No, same here. It's instinct.
Even in my really shitty Honda Civic, but that's okay.
No, I'm like, now it takes like, instead of the hour or whatever it would take to get here, It takes 26 minutes. And I always forget.
You know who also drove fast? Marie in this.
Okay. Whatever. If we're going to do that, fine. Hey, hi, everybody.
Let's just...
That was the worst one. That was literally the worst one.
I was like, segue. We can't talk forever, but also I need a segue.
No, it's very, very, I imagine it was pretty tense trying to figure that one out. Ooh.
Ooh. Wow. Anyway, hey. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome everyone.
It was so bad. Hi, people.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, horrible with segues.
Yeah.
Also, with just as bad about puns, Anthony Fuentes.
Yeah.
How are you?
That's why we're destined to do this podcast together. I'm okay. Had a good drive.
We're just lamenting about the small things that we can do on a week-to-week basis that remind us of what life once was before.
We
were in, you know, isolation. At this point, by the time this episode comes out, it'll be a month and a half for us here in California.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
So, yeah,
and then soon after that, Texas and Florida are going to go ahead and open the gates. So that's going to be interesting.
Texas, we'll see how it goes.
Texas listeners, please let us know. We don't have any Florida listeners. So.
I don't think Florida is big on the podcast. On the podcast listening.
We have to put it on AM radio and fuck that.
Anyway, guys.
And the liberals.
And then we also have to change our politic, I think.
Yeah. Can't tell people I'm Mexican, like, oh no, I just stay in the sun for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know where the black hair came from.
Fucked up. Anyway, guys, today we're talking about High Tension from 2003, otherwise known as Haute Tension from France, and Switchblade Romance if you're in the UK.
Oh, I remember that from the Ryan Hollinger video.
Yeah.
That's a good title.
I love the title. Like, Switchblade Romance is amazing as a title. Dude. I liked that almost better than High Tension.
I think so too, but it's not as easily marketable, I don't think. Like,
it's
High Tension's
true.
Like stock, like, oh, horror movie, yeah.
Like High Tension. Yeah. It's a tense movie.
Switchblade Romance is like, are they gonna fuck or what's going on?
Yeah, Switchblade Romance sounds like an angsty album title that I would have listened to in high school. Like,
yeah, when you're looking like the girl from Ginger Snaps.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it definitely has that vibe. So, let's see. So,
IMDb has some information for us, as they do every week. Well, this time, they're telling us the... Let me just get into it. But, quote, best friends Marie and Alexia decide to spend a quiet weekend at Alexia's parents' secluded farmhouse. But on the night of their arrival, the girls' idyllic getaway turns into an endless night of horror.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's the movie. I mean, the premise of the movie is simple, right?
Yeah.
It's the last 20 minutes of the movie that you're just like, you want to die. But anyway, we'll get into it.
I mean, the movie's like... has a very good sense of dread.
It's like a tense movie. Like, literally, like, I'm gonna say that a lot, but no pun intended. It is a tense movie.
It's so tense.
It builds tension well, and I hate it, but I'm gonna say tension and tense quite a bit, but it's true.
I just want to say Switchblade Romance more.
It's true.
But this one was directed by somebody we've covered already on the podcast.
Yes.
Our fucking boy, Alexandre Aja.
Yes.
And then it was produced, of course, by Alexandre Arcadi.
Yeah.
And then Robert Ben Musa. I like that name, actually. This was written by Alexandre Aja, of course, and then Gregory Lavesu.
Lavesu.
Lavesu. Okay. All right, cool. You make me do with the French names. It's great.
Every time. So I wrote this before, like in the beginning. So I usually set this up before I do extensive romance. Alexandra Arcady is Alexandra Aja. It's the same person.
Oh, it is.
He has a pseudonym. We'll get into it.
Of course.
You're about to tell us about it.
Cool. Sweet. Let's do it then. And also tell you about the cast here. Cécile de Français. As Marie.
Cécile de France.
De France. As Marie. De France.
I'm going to try to sound French.
I will try a little bit.
And sound absolutely wrong.
And just fall on my face. All right. And then, what is this? Ma Wen?
Yeah, I have no idea for this one.
Ma Wen as Alexia, if you want to be French about it.
The French version, her name is Alexia.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, okay, because
I had to say it breathy like Maria, or Marie in the movie, because the whole movie, she's just like, Alexia.
Oh my gosh. And the American one's like, Alex!
Yeah.
Philippe Nahon as the killer.
Yeah.
Who looks fucking creepy. Brutal. Dude, like, that jumpsuit. I mean, killers in jumpsuits already.
It's a good good casting.
It's a good look, yeah, for sure. This was released in June 18, 2003 in France. And, of course, it was budgeted at $2.5 million, and it made $6.8 million. So, yeah, moderate hit. So, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, this is the definition of a moderate hit, yeah. For sure.
But I feel like its legacy is beyond this box office,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. And they're going to pause again and tell you guys, hey, if you haven't seen this movie, watch this movie. But caveat here, it's brutal.
It's super graphic. This is also not going to be a spoiler-free episode.
No.
So if you can, and this is a movie where, and we've said this a couple times, but genuinely for a movie like this, the spoilers matter for how you contextualize the film. Watching it for me the second time after seeing it the first time and knowing what happens, it kind of changes how you watch the movie.
It does, huh?
So for me, and I think it also changes, like, how I view it. So I think if you have never seen this movie, please do yourself a favor and watch it. I think everyone should see it once,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of my opinion on it. And we will get into that. But, yeah, definitely do yourself a favor and watch it before you listen to this podcast if you haven't. Because, like I said, not a spoiler-free episode. It never is. We are not a spoiler-free podcast. We never will be.
Well, we like to be a little heads up.
I know, but we're still telling you what's up, you know what I mean? But yeah, because if you listen to it and you haven't seen the movie, we're just going to ruin it, and then it's going to ruin how you watch the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that.
It's a slasher that actually has some pretty big story significance, so that's very surprising.
I mean, sure.
Yeah. But okay, that was your warning. Now go watch the movie and come back at this timestamp right now.
Welcome back!
Yay! What's up, guys?
Hope you're okay.
We're going to go ahead and break you into the production here and tell you a little bit about our boy, Alexandra Aja, who was born into the business. Already ahead of the game, actually. So, he was born in 1978 as Alexandra Johan? Arcady?
Yeah, sure.
That's a lot of fucking...
It's very French.
Yeah.
Good luck with the rest.
Great. To a film critic mother, and to a film critic mother and established director father. His father, Alexandra Arcady, and his mother, Marie Jo Johan, in Paris, France, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All these French names.
I know, too
Bless
much.
Bless your heart.
While there isn't much about his upbringing, we can't assume that he learned a thing or two about the industry with, you know, these two prominent people in the industry.
In his life, for sure.
He had minor roles in his father's films growing up, and he knew his way around a set probably from pretty fucking early on.
Yeah, I have a feeling he grew up around... I couldn't find anything to confirm nor deny, but I have a feeling he probably grew up running around film sets.
Yeah, it's like, no, give him to the babysitter, that's fine. But at 18, he adopted the pseudonym Alexandra Aja, Aja coming from his initials, and made his directorial debut. Over the Rainbow received a Cannes Film Festival Golden Palm Award nomination for Best Short Film, and that was in 1997. So,
yeah.
Wow, he actually only took 6 years after his Cannes debut. That's not that bad.
Yeah, and he only... Yeah, we'll get into it.
Damn. It was around this time that Aja established himself with French screenwriter and childhood friend Gregory Levasseur, with whom Audra continues to work with to this day. I remember covering this in Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, you also had a problem with Levasseur back then, too.
His French names fuck me up. but by 1999, he'd made his feature film debut with Furia. And in 2002, he wrote and acted as assistant director for a film titled
Entre Chien et Loup.
That film, known as Between Dogs and Wolves in English.
Yeah, it has no Wikipedia page. It doesn't have shit. I was just like, I feel like this is important, so we're going to get...
Okay, yeah. I mean, it probably got him this. Yeah. But after his more recent films, Aja was named as a member of the Splat Pack, the term being coined by film historian Alan Jones in Total Film Magazine for a new wave of directors making brutally violent horror films. We didn't get to mention that in our Cabin Fever episode where we talk about fellow Splat Pack member Eli Roth.
Yeah, I didn't find like the actual source of who named Splat Pack members, but mm-hmm. I found it in this for this episode. So I was like, I feel like we should probably credit the guy who came up with it.
Total film, that's true. and again, it's kind of cool that we had within the month two Splat Pack members.
Yeah, for sure.
Splat month here at the Horrible People's Podcast.
Well, we have him, and then also when we did Hills Have Eyes, which also wasn't too long ago, we also obviously talked about Aja then as well.
So a pretty graphic season too, with the child death and everything also.
Very graphic.
Which this movie also fucking has.
Child death, yeah.
What a season.
Fuck them kids.
I know. Season one, like none. Season two, every other fucking episode. That's horrible.
Yeah.
But in 2013. Jeez. Time traveling. No, he had 10 years of just finding himself, you know?
He did a little traveling. He became a...
I changed his name again to Alexandra Ajax after his favorite cleaning supply. But in 2003, he directed High Tension, which brings us almost to the production of the movie. But before we can get into the production of High Tension, we have to discuss the history of its themes that make it so scary. Yeah,
kind of.
It's pretty freaky. No, it's pretty scary to me.
So High Tension falls under a category of films called New French Extremity. And if you are in film or are you aware of film, you're aware of New French Extremity. It's very, obviously, you can tell it's French and it's extreme.
Yeah.
It was coined by art form critic James Quant for a collection of transgressive films by French directors in the early 2000s. This film obviously hits that mark again.
Pretty fundamental, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. François Ahn, Gaspard Noël, and Catherine Brilliant, and Bruno Dumont were other names dropped by that, or rather name drop directors. The list is long, though.
Like, okay.
Like, I could go on and on. There's films, there's names that, yeah, it's, just trust me.
Interesting.
Quand wrote this term as a negative, but the damage was done. The phrase took off like wildfire, and people started using it for critically acclaimed films.
I love when that happens. I was like, yeah, look at these pieces of shit. Hey, dude, we're the pieces of shit. Fuck yeah.
I love it. Yeah. And that's what I really like, because also the term New French Extremity just also has like a certain level of eloquence to it as is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just think it just sounds like it was made to be written in academia.
Well, that, and it's just like people are just like, oh, yeah, so you're saying something that's pushing the limits here? Well, we're limit pushers, and we're gonna fucking, like take
and
hold of that.
They took it, and they ran. They ran long. They ran far.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's French films. So
yeah. Good Lord. So while the New French Extremity refers to a stylistically diverse group of films and filmmakers, it's been described as a, quote, crossover between sexual decadence, bestial violence, and troubling psychosis, unquote.
That's a very good summation of this film. Holy shit.
I love that, though. Like, that's, because you can use that for anything. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be horror. Like, obviously, horror is a route. It's not quite New French Extremity, because obviously New French Extremity was only from 2000 to... the 2010s-ish. Mm-hmm. But Gaspard Noé did recently Climax, which was, we had seen trailers for it at the Frida. Like, it very similar themes, and so obviously he's stuck to what he knows. The New French Extremity movement has roots in art house and horror cinema, obviously. going with those themes, mm-hmm. it kind of goes hand in hand, especially with the violence and psychosis themes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Violence and Psychosis the movie is this fucking shit right here, dude.
Psychosis the movie. Alternative title other than Switchblade Romance. So according to film blogger Matt Smith, this tradition has recently, quote, shoved its way very consciously into France's genre endeavors, unquote. Yeah.
Okay, I gotta watch more French shit.
Okay, good luck. So New French Extremity can be described as a combination of two cinematic genres. One we've explored at great length on this show already. One is body horror.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So film scholar Linda Williams has written about the so-called body genres, also known as gross genres or genres of excess. We've talked about this, actually, this quote exactly from our episode on The Fly.
Way back
in the day. I think it was like episode like 11.
People got to listen to The Fly. It's still our worst ranked episode for some reason.
It was the first episode I ever wrote, and I stand by it. But we're going to talk about this quote again because I think it's really, really important. So genres of excess are labels that include pornography, horror, and melodrama. Body genre films are quote, a promise to be sensational, to give our bodies an actual physical jolt, unquote. Their displays of sensation are on the edge of respectable.
Which... That's the name of this movie, too. On the Edge of Respectable. It's like right there.
It's true. No, it's on the edge.
Yeah, it's almost there.
But then it just makes everyone feel angry. So, but this is what attracts audiences to them. These films are just on principle spectacle driven, depicting mm-hmm. human bodies overcome by intense physical or emotional sensation. Most notably, pleasure, terror, or sadness, in that order. If you're going pornography, horror, or melodrama.
Jeez.
Body genre films are also marked by the fact that they induce within viewers an involuntary mimicry of the emotions or sensations portrayed on the screen. This is a fancy way of saying it makes you feel what you're watching.
Mm.
Pleasure in porn, terror in horror, and sadness in melodrama. So on and so forth. The other is exploitation cinema.
Oh, what? Okay, yeah. I can see it with this shit. Body horror and exploitation. That makes total fucking sense.
Yeah. So there are comparisons to the American exploitation cinema of the 70s. USC film scholar Tanya Mildesky says that much of what set the American exploitation movement apart from the Hollywood-dominated horror films that came before was, quote, exploitation films' unprecedented assault on all of the bourgeois culture that is supposed to cherish, like the ideological apparatus of the family and the school, unquote.
Interesting.
So basically what this quote is saying is that it's counterculture.
No, I mean, yeah. For actually a deeper look as to our looks at exploitation, last mm-hmm. season we did Blackula.
Yeah.
Which was a very big look at exploitation and totally. Blaxploitation.
Yeah, Blaxploitation for sure. We also mm-hmm. talked a little bit about exploitation cinema. I would love to do more on exploitation cinema.
Well, another one we did too was The Killing of America. Yeah. Which had a lot into that one.
Yeah, yeah, we talked a lot about that.
So yeah, last season's March and February episodes. Check those out.
Those were actually really fun. I mean, obviously not fun, but
they were difficult to watch a little bit.
Well, Killing of America was really, really hard. But yeah. I mean, we talked a lot about exploitation cinema. We got to talk about like Mondo films, mm-hmm. and this also obviously, you know, Mondo films inspired Eli Roth, who also became an exploitation director. Yeah. So it all kind of ties together.
We were pushing the extremes. Jeez.
So films like The Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Brood, which is also a Cronenberg and body horror film.
Thank you, Canada.
Mildesky says, were at the time noteworthy for their, quote, adversarial relation to contemporary culture and society. So they went against the grain. The Brood, I cannot recommend it enough. It is weird as shit.
Next for Cronenberg Christmas.
Oh, no, I am holding on to The Brood for a very, very special season way in the future.
All right, cool. All right, that's interesting.
So in much of the same way, many films belonging to New French Extremity have been explicit in their criticism and rejection of bourgeois ideals. Films like Martyrs, Inside, and Frontier, for example, have been noted for their subversive attitudes towards dominant political, social, and cultural orders. So very counterculture-y, but also, I mean, I think that's also very interesting because at the end of the day, they're very, like, they play into, in the case of, I don't know about Martyrs necessarily, because I can only speak to the movies that I've seen, but in High Tension, at the end of the day, like, they're kind of playing on some tropes here.
Yeah.
So, I think that's kind of interesting. Anyway, I have a lot of thoughts. I really, I cannot wait till we get to talk about this movie. But both exploitation cinema and New French Extremity are categorized in large by their transgressive attitudes towards depicting violence and sex together. So
yeah, they kind of go hand in hand in this movie.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It's
pretty fucked up.
They're integral, yeah. Right? And I think that's a huge part of the movie and the kind of the psychosis of the whole part.
Well, it's the thing too. Like again, like you said, watching it the first time and second time. Thinking about that and your thoughts of what's happening.
Yeah. Oof. We'll get into it.
Yeah.
But so now that you guys are all sufficiently confused, let's talk about the movie.
Well, okay, yeah, let's get into that. But still, hey, it's something.
That was my theory corner. I could talk about this forever because, like, New French Extremity also goes into. Like the theater of cruelty, and it goes into like you know Marquis de Sade. It goes into like deep theory.
You just gotta dumb it down.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned that, Anthony, because I spent hours working on a work project. My boss is making a course for work, and he had me help him write part of it, which basically means I wrote part of it.
Nice.
Which was, I was very excited, and I was just like, cool. And I worked really hard, and I did a bunch of research, and I did like 6 pages, like I do for this podcast.
Like, yeah, have you been acclimated to do now?
Right. And I gave it to him, and he was just like, you need to dumb this down.
No, yeah. Dude, when I was writing blogs, same shit. They were like, can you just like make this a little like simple? I'm like, fuck, I forget people are dumbasses.
and I was just like, I was crushed. Like, I kept all of the stuff that I wrote because I was really proud of it. But then I had to, like, copy it and then, like, rewrite it.
In layman's terms.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, this sucks. This sucks so hard. So, yeah, I'm not saying you guys are stupid, but also.
No. It's a tough subject.
It's really hard. French cinema is hard. Film theory is really difficult. I just happen to be a huge, gigantic dork about it.
Well, I think what makes French cinema hard is just the names. that's what fucks me up.
It's just, there's so much theory, and it could just, like literally could be what I did, where I just got really stoned, like, yesterday and just went down a rabbit hole and was just like, there's so much to talk about. And then I had to, like, write it in and be like, Alex, you're not a professor. This is not a college level course.
No, you did a good job
though.
This
is a podcast.
Yeah, no.
Just write what you know.
Understandable.
And I was just like, okay. And well, so this is what you guys get. If you guys are interested in more, let me know. And I can talk to you about it forever. It'll be on my TED Talk.
Do it. Yeah, no. Patreon exclusive.
Oh, yeah.
Alex's Theory Corner. That's not a bad idea. But also, I remember, too, a little aside, it's a problem that I remembered in college with having teachers that were in the grad students. Because they'd be like, oh, everybody understands this, right? And we'd be dumbass, like, underclassmen, like, dude, you have to. You have to, like, make it a little easier for us, because you guys, this is your life.
This is all you do.
I'm also taking bullshit courses while doing this.
I work part-time, and I'm hungover.
Yeah.
So.
But no, good job every time. I'm like, I still get it.
Okay, I'm glad.
It's just the French names. That's the only part that fucks me up.
That's fine. And that's what I'm here for.
Yeah. But I gotta say some French names now. So,
okay.
Let me get into here. So, oh, there it is again. Alexandra Aja and Gregory Levasseur?
It's a not a
Oh, my fucking vocal cords don't do that.
Fine. With practice.
Yeah. Well, they're, of course, childhood friends, as mentioned earlier, and they made this film as an homage to old school horror films of the 70s and 80s that they would actually watch growing up, which you can see. No, this is 100%.
Yeah.
Like, dude, serious. But influenced by Dean Koontz's novel Intensity, which I remember back in the day, him and, like, Stephen King were, like, growing up, it was like, oh, you like Stephen King? Like, you like a guy named Dean Koontz? Fuck you. I was a King person. So
yeah,
that's
one of one of my really, really, really good friends I've been friends with since, like, eighth grade, like, loves Dean Koontz, and I'm just like, I literally have not read any of his stuff, so I'm just like,
I remember having an English teacher, and that was there was a Dean Koontz book and Stephen King books inside where you would, like, do, like, 20-minute reading before whatever.
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember school.
And I think she would quietly judge people based on your choice, because when I picked up the Stephen King books, she was like, oh, you know what's a good book, right? And, like, when you'd start talking to me about it, and the Dean Koontz kid, she's just like, yeah, fucking, whatever. Like,
that's
yeah, go right over there.
Funny as shit. Like,
right? She was a good English teacher.
The kid
teacher.
Gets bullied, and she's just like, ugh.
She's like, well, can't be that smart, can he?
You're so mean. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that was referred to our Donnie Darker episode where me and James talk about the Clazies, our teachers in high school. That was Miss Clazy was the one who we bonded over Stephen King, obviously. But but they obviously read the novel prior to making High Tension, of course. And despite the similarities, Koontz later elected not to pursue a plagiarism case, as High Tension only resembles Intensity in the first half of the film, which, okay, now I gotta read this, at least read the synopsis, whatever.
Yeah.
He also thinks it's a trashy movie. He stated that while he was aware of the comparison, he would not sue because he found the film, quote, so puerile, so disgusting, oh, let me do a Dean Koontz voice, so puerile, so disgusting, and so intellectually bankrupt that he didn't want the association with it, and that would inevitably come with if he pursued an action against the filmmaker.
Is that what he sounds like?
I'm Dean Koontz. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I was just like, are you coming up with this? Like,
I did. That was every time I read his name in a book title, I'm just like, I'm Dean Koontz.
So is this like your longstanding?
My longstanding, just like.
Like Koontz voice in your head?
Yeah, my Koontz voice. Just gives me stupid advice every time. I'm like, huh, maybe you should buy this. Maybe you should.
Shut the fuck up,
Koontz voice.
Oh, man.
Jeez. But this bad boy, of course, was shot in 36 days. Not bad.
That's
pretty good.
I mean, it's a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
With a lot of special effects.
A little over a month.
I don't know what normal is.
With, like, well, it has a cast of, like, four people.
Point taken.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty fast turnaround. But according to Alexandra Aja, the scene where Marie hides from the killer in the gas station restroom is an homage to a similar scene in Maniac, which we haven't seen.
Yes, but he would also later go on to remake that film.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Okay. Him or Lavasu?
Well.
Yeah.
We're going to have to cover that at some point now. So, cool.
There you go.
Remake versus OG Maniac in season 4 of the Horrible People's Podcast. But four different locations were used for Alexia's house, but the set dressing and editing make it appear as one location. Wow, that's pretty... Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
There you go.
Really seamless job there.
We love seamless set design.
Seriously, that's good. And within 36 days.
Yeah, like the interior shots, like for some of them, it was like literally a garage.
Somebody's dad was a film director. It's like, oh, you dumbass. No, just use these sets and you're fine.
Just use the garage.
But on top of that, the location used for the exteriors of Alexia's house was actually a dilapidated mill that the production cleaned up and dressed for the film. You can kind of see that a little bit.
But I love it. Like, southern France is, and this is like just me being a little Francophile.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
It has that countryside.
It has, like, that country, like, mm-hmm. Ugh, it's beautiful.
Fields and fucking.
Yeah, like, southern France is just, it's such a beautiful place. So I would love to go one day, but.
It makes for a good looking horror set, too, like, setting.
Sure, yeah. I mean, and it's just, I mean, the same way that, like, the South here, like,
yeah.
Makes for a good,
like, a Texas
horror
chainsaw.
Film.
Yeah, kind of. Well, exactly. That's why I'm drawing the comparison there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I don't know why that was disputable. Yeah,
we've been doing this.
We agree. All right. I'll fuck.
We fucking agree. We've been doing this for 2 years.
We just read each other's mind. Then it's there. There we go. All right.
Today. God.
Fuck. We love each other, everybody. It's okay.
Your podcast parents are getting a divorce.
Oh, I accidentally clicked back on my fucking script. Switchblade Romance.
Pull your shit together. Just get your shit together. Put it in a bag.
I tried scrolling. I know. I got to get my shit together. It's one of those days. Ugh. Okay, where was I? Oh, I was looking at release and reception. The film is set in south of France, but it was shot entirely in Romania due to budgetary reasons and the availability of similar locations.
Huh. Like, oh gosh, what was it? Don't Breathe. Yeah. That was also shot in Romania.
Hungary.
Hungary, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, that Eastern European block of, like...
They're just like, we're gonna film here because it's cheap and available.
Check out Detroit, everybody.
Look at this Detroit neighborhood. Yeah. Also, the south of France.
Yeah. It looks like it's a countryside, right?
Also, Detroit. Inner city Detroit.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, good ideas for later film locations. Settings. Yeah, yeah, for sure. But once cast, Cécile de France, trained with a Thai boxer to get in shape for her physically demanding role in the film, which is okay. I think I can kind of see that.
She's like strong as hell in this entire movie. It's unsettling. Like, I'm like, I want to be that strong, but also seriously,
she kind of looks like she could be like an action movie heroine. Like, yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But she also did most of the stunt driving during her car chase through the woods, too, so...
She's kind of a badass.
Dude, she gotta be in more shit.
She probably is in more shit, but she's French, so she's probably in more French movies.
She is bound to be in A Fast and the Furious at some point. Nah, it's been like 20 years, though. Fuck me.
I don't know. Oh my god, it's been 20 years, and she's like... She was like, I don't know.
Early 20s at this point.
Oh, yeah, she had to have been. So yeah, she's like in her 40s.
Fuck.
Time is weird.
Oh, man. Just jump off a goddamn bridge right now. All right, well. I should try to. We just blew ourselves. Wow. Horribly loose podcast. We just had an existential crisis in the middle of this. High tension, everybody. Oh, my God. What is happening? This quarantine's fucking us up. I just tried at first to keep De France and Nohan separated during filming in the hopes of enhancing the antagonistic fear between them. But he quickly realized that that was, quote, really dumb. Two actors became good friends.
What's it like, though, being hired strictly on the fact that you just look menacing and ugly?
I mean, he had to see the call. Like, it was like, oh, we need somebody who looks like an oaf.
Who's menacing and ugly.
And he's, like, his wife's just like, babe, I love you.
But, like,
you can do this. He's like, you never told me this before. I was like, yeah, but we need to put some food on the table. Like, this is...
You haven't gotten an acting gig in months.
I saw you wear a jumpsuit that one time, and I knew
you could do this. He was creepy as hell.
Dude. And even the close-ups of his, like, they obscured his face for a lot of it, and then out of nowhere they start showing it more, and I'm like, eee. Still pretty fucked up. Okay. The camera used during the car attack scene got so much fake blood on it during shooting that when it was being used on another film later on, fake blood oozed from it during the focusing of a shot.
It got, ooh, like, blood stuck in the camera.
Oh my god, that is insane.
That is... gross.
Yeah, that's a little weird. But the shot,
I'm also just imagining them like being like, okay, we're getting set for the shot, and then
it's like a romantic comedy.
No, I mean, it's still the same movie, but like they're like getting ready. Oh, it's another film later. Oh, it is another film. So yeah. Okay, yeah, let's imagine
it's like the French driving Miss Daisy, and they're just like, okay, well,
let's focus this shot, and then they adjust it, and then suddenly blood just starts pouring out. They think it's like a cursed camera.
Yeah, it's like a haunted fucking car.
Yeah. Speaking of which, real quick, if you have Shudder, cursed films or something, there's a Shudder original.
Ooh, I still gotta check that out.
I haven't looked at it yet, but I've heard good things.
Okay.
I looked at the episodes. The only one that they have an episode on that we have not already covered is Poltergeist.
Ooh.
But everything else, they have an episode on The Omen. They have an episode on Twilight Zone. They have an episode on Exorcist. Like, it's like,
dude, I'm like down to watch this now. Maybe we'll watch we're playing Animal Crossing. Yeah. Be fun.
All right. Duality, I guess. But yeah,
that's what the Switch is for.
There's five episodes. But yeah, they did one on Twilight Zone, the movie. I think I saw a warning in the Twilight Zone episode. I'm pretty sure they show like the actual news footage.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
So I'm probably not going to watch it.
I mean, just look down, but it's
I don't have a Switch to look at.
I do. Let's keep going. We should cover Poltergeist at some point, though. That's got to come up. Because that's a good cursed film.
It is like probably the cursed production.
Plus, I get to talk shit on Craig T. Nelson, who's a goddamn asshole.
Yeah. I think I promised someone something for the Poltergeist.
Okay. So,
anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway,
again, if I can just talk shit on Craig T. Nelson, I'll be happy.
Whatever you want. This is your podcast.
Confirmed, guys. Happening. Anyways, so the shot where the fake blood splatters on the camera lens during the murder of the driver was actually an accident. But the shot impressed director Alexandre Aja, so it was left in the film. And that's hilarious because I thought it was a cool stylistic choice when I saw it. I was like, wow, dude's got style. He's like, and then it was a total fucking happy accident.
We love a good coinky-dink.
That's awesome. The graphic shot was cut from the theatrical release, though, but was restored for the DVD release. Oh, so I did see the good cut.
Yeah, so we're going to get into the scenes that were cut from the film, and I'm pretty sure we all saw them.
Okay, we had to have it. Yeah, yeah. The scenes in the woods were particularly rough for stars.
Cécile de France.
And
Ma Wen.
Just Ma Wen. As both were supposed to be barefooted, and the weather was quite cold.
It is this lush, beautiful southern France, like, forest. Or in this case, Romanian forest. Yeah. In this case, Romanian forest. Like, it's beautiful.
Oh my gosh. And barefoot, though, too.
I would have been freezing. Dude. I'm cold now. And I'm not that cold now, but, like, I get cold here, and I live in California, where it's basically temperature-controlled year-round.
Yeah, good old anemia. All right, spoiler territory, though. Last warning, because it's a big spoiler. So if you didn't heed our warning and wanted to keep listening, now you need to shut the fuck up and go watch the movie.
It's like the spoiler of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Luke, I am your father spoiler. Like,
yeah,
come
exactly.
On.
So turn, you know, put on your Spotify instead to, like, a music station that, you know. Whatevs.
Do, 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 do.
Somebody messaged me, of course, right now. Okay, cool. So, we're back. Glad you watched the thingy. Let's get into this bitch. So, according to Aja, the screenplay version of the film had the entire movie from Marie's version of events. You didn't find out she was the killer until the end of the film after Marie defeats the killer and rescues Alex.
What?
When it would cut back to the hospital room and you see, of course, Marie in handcuffs, particularly. A police officer would roll in a TV and show Marie the video of her killing the gas station attendant and ask if she wanted to change her story. The real version of events was meant to be another movie entirely. However, when the writers presented the script to French director Luc Besson, fucking love Luc Besson, except he has some very weird personal issues. He convinced them.
Okay.
Oh, you don't know about it. Oh, if he ever did a horror film, we'll cover it so I can just talk about his history, Mr. Besson. Yeah.
Okay. So I had this when I was doing research, his name was presented without the precursor of French film director,
mm-hmm.
and I had no idea who that was, and I was like, is he involved in the film somehow? So I had to Google him, and then I was like, okay, so now I know who he is.
Fifth Element, yep.
Okay, no, I didn't know that, mm-hmm. but anyway, but yeah, so there we go. So we can talk about him off air.
Yeah, all right. But he convinced them to change the ending to include the last reel of the film revealing Marie as the killer instead of the last 5 minutes. Pretty cool. That's a better decision. Like
I agree.
Yeah, no, that makes more sense. Because when that revelation happens.
Spoiler.
Yeah.
Ooh, she's the killer.
She's actually the killer. Ooh.
All
that's
along.
Ugh, that fucking like Muse song though playing. And then like the TV, the CCTV footage. Like it's so well done.
It's, you know what? It feels, it's because it's the early 2000s and it's because it's gratuitous and because it's hyper violent. It feels like Saw.
Yeah.
With the Muse, like with like the rock music.
It does.
It feels like
it feels pretty
to me.
Early 2000s.
Like, I don't know.
But like a million times better. So, the original concept for the film was for it to take place entirely at Alexia's house over the course of the night. Aja and Levesieux decided
did it!
Hey, thanks, yeah! They decided, yeah, I'm fucking excited that the story needed more locations. But wanted to keep the idea of it taking place all in one evening, which. Better decision?
Mm-hmm.
I dig. Aja saying, quote, we realized that the night was the real location of the movie, end quote.
And that's taken from the director's commentary. The next quote is also taken from the director's commentary.
Cool, here it is.
Out of context.
Quote, I don't think it's so easy to stab a person, even if that person killed your family, end quote. Alexandra Aja. There you go. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that reminds me of, like, Edmund Kemper, when he, like, talked about stabbing somebody. He's like, it's not like the movies, you know? You're fucking, they just bleed out and, like, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Fucking, this guy is a fucking Kemper-ass motherfucker. Yeah. Like, just hulking, no glasses, not as nerdy. Definitely as dirty, though. You didn't see Alex's face. I think mentioning Edmund Kemper just puts you in a fucking tiz right now, huh?
He freaks me out, man.
He's a weirdo.
He's a weirdo, but also, like, he's just, like, literally so nice.
Poised. He's poised as fuck.
To people. And mm-hmm. then he's not. And I just... He interests me, and he scares me. And he's the kind of...
Yeah.
I've seen Mindhunter.
And The Killing of America. You've had enough exposure to Kemper.
I've had so much exposure. I also know, like, he's in Victorville.
Yeah.
He's in fucking Victorville.
Next to my fucking school that I went to like, college in.
He's right there. He's, like, not far.
6 hours away.
That's far-ish, but, you know, not far.
No, he's within the vicinity. If Kemper went on a rage, like, old man Kemper, fucking Logan.
Like, old man Logan.
Yeah.
No.
Old man Kemper.
Old man Kemper's not going anywhere.
No, he's not.
He's too busy reading for the prisoners at Victorville.
But, like, prison. He gets out and, like unburies a hole, and it's, like, his Santa Cruz license plate, and he's just, like, just dust it off. It's been a long time, buddy.
I hate you for putting that image in my brain.
Finds the glasses, just
thank you for that.
He's training another renegade killer. That's horrible.
Like,
some other fucking edgelord.
It's like Edmund 23 or whatever. Yeah.
He's just as tall, holy shit.
He's just as tall. God damn it. Break it in.
actually, a quick shout out here. There's a podcast I listen to called the Bumblebutt Podcast. They just had they had their 100th episode on Edmund Kemper. Do you have to listen? The guys did a 3-part series. It's
so they
hilarious.
Only talk about?
No, they talk about all kinds of serial. Okay. They actually go some pretty fucked up shit. They're really good. But their 100th was Edmund Kemper.
Awesome.
So yeah, and they go deep. So if you guys want to listen to them, they're good old Midwest boys or Middle America. I forget the thingy. Where are we from? Sorry.
But you listen to them and you support them.
I support them. You guys
that's
do great.
Awesome.
Yes.
Also, I just love the name because it's a last podcast reference.
Exactly. Well, he calls himself a bumblebutt. You know, old man bumblebutt. There you go. Anyways, movie got released. How'd it go, Alex?
You literally brought it up. Literally, you're the one who introduced the caveat. This is your fault. Old man Kemper.
Old man Kemper. Let's go.
Jesus Lord. Anyway, so bringing it back to high tension. Good old 2003. Let's go back there. I was 8 years old. Yikes. Okay, so the film was shown at the 2003 Toronto International Film Festival during the Midnight Madness section. We say that sentence so much on this podcast.
Right? It's a big festival, apparently.
I know. After screening at the festival.
Festivus.
The film, we are delirious.
No, we're like past the point now. No, once we got past the fucking French extremity, we're like, yeah, our minds are fucking scrambled.
No, we have extensive discussion to get through, so rein it
in. Let's go back. We got this.
So the film was purchased by Lionsgate Films for North American distribution after... in her book, Films of the New French Extremity, Alexandra West describes the screening of High Tension at Midnight Madness made the section of the film festival a, quote, unintentional bastion for New French Extremity, which still did not have a popular following at the time in America.
Okay. Well, shit. It's a rallying cry for everybody, huh?
Right. So because of this, the movie needed a bit of a redo if it was going to have a chance in the States. Lionsgate released an English-dubbed version of the film to 1,323 theaters on June 10th, 2005.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a bad dub, though.
Oh, shit. It's dog shit. With a $14 million marketing... Yeah, $14 million marketing cost, by the way.
Oh, they were trying to get that Saw money right there.
Jesus Christ. So not to mention, several murder scenes were removed in order to avoid an NC-17 rating. A recut theatrical trailer was also issued by Lionsgate to promote the film, featuring Superstar by Sonic Youth.
Huh. This is some early 2000s shit. Okay.
For sure. All in all, about a minute was cut from the film to keep our friends at the MPAA from giving High Tension an NC-17 rating. If you've seen the French version or the DVD, you know, remastering, here are the scenes that were cut. Alex's father is graphically decapitated with a bookcase, and his headless neck is spraying blood. In the R-rated version, the murder is edited to quickly cut away as the bookcase crushes and severs his head. Later, the body is seen on the staircase without the head.
Yep.
This is the version I saw. Mm-hmm. I saw the R-rated version. I saw the R-rated version in this case. When Alex's mother has her throat slashed, the scene is shortened. Most of the arterial spurting as the killer pulls her head back is gone. Subsequent shots of Marie inspecting the body has also been edited.
That was longer? Jeez.
Yeah.
Or that was shorter? Fuck.
Yeah, it's longer in the...
French version.
In the French version, it's longer, yeah.
Damn.
The death of Jimmy, the gas station clerk, has also been shortened. Close-up shots of the axe sticking in his chest has also been removed.
These are pretty killer shots that you're just... Yeah.
These are... Yeah.
Huh.
So the scene where Marie strikes the killer's face with the barbed wire pole is shortened and less explicit. Marie hits the killer fewer times and fewer details of the killer's wounds are shown.
Interesting.
Yeah. The driver's disembowelment with the concrete saw was shortened.
That was a bloody ass fucking kill.
Oh, that it turned into like a scene from like The Green Inferno with like Alex in the back. She's like covered in blood. I was just like, this is literally a scene from Green Inferno.
Or like the deer scene in Cabin Fever.
Yeah, same shit. Like just covered.
Same philosophy. Yeah.
Eli Roth and
Alexandra Aja. The splat. What is it? Splat pack.
Splat pack. Yeah.
I can't imagine why they named them that.
And then, of course, a close up of the crowbar in Marie's shoulder is missing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All these nasty fucking shots, dude.
Oh, they're gross.
Yeah.
But a lot of the ones, like the first one with Alex's dad, like I'm so glad they did not show a close up of that because that one just made me cringe so bad. Same with Alex's mom. But so following High Tension's release at TIFF, the other films followed at the festival, such as Caviar from 2004, Chiton from 2006, and Martyrs in 2008, which we will talk about eventually because it is the weirdest fucking movie I've ever seen in my life.
Cool. I'm down.
opening weekend, it made $1,897,705 in 1,323 theaters in the United States.
Oof.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Its run here in the States yielded a total of $3,681,066 in the box office and internationally, kind of. I say internationally, kind of, obviously, considering that it's French movie,
yeah.
But it was distributed here. Anyway, it made $2,610,892, totaling $6,291,958.
Good reading right there. Yeah,
I'll be here all week.
That was nice. I mean, shit for them because that's not a good return.
No, it's. I mean, technically, the producers made their money back. The distributors did not.
No, yeah, they got a little fucked on that one
because
yeah.
they poured in a $14 million marketing budget for this movie. I don't know why they did that, but whatever.
Saw money. They wanted the Saw money.
I guess. Anyway, so High Tension was included in Times Magazine's top 10 most ridiculously violent films, and probably with good reason. on to reviews. Oh, boy.
Hey, this is interesting.
On Rotten Tomatoes, the film holds a 40% approval rating based on 132 reviews with an average of 5.12 out of 10.
That's divisive.
Yeah. The consensus states, there is indeed a good amount of tension in this French slasher. Fuck you guys. But the dubbing is bad and the end twist unbelievable.
Okay, I remember reading a Roger Ebert review at the time.
Oh, we're gonna get there.
Yeah.
It also received a score of 42 on Metacritic based on 30 critics, classifying it as having received, quote, mixed or average reviews.
I'm gonna go ahead and say mixed.
Mixed at best.
Yeah.
Roger Ebert.
Yes. Oh, that's there it is. Yeah.
He gave the film only one star, opening his review with, quote, "The philosopher Thomas Hobbes tells us life can be poor, nasty, brutish, and short. So is this movie, unquote. He added that the film had a plot hole, quote, that is not only large enough to drive a truck through, but in fact does have a truck driven right through it, unquote.
That's what I remember reading at the time.
What a way with words. Yep. It's like cutting and just so funny.
Oh, when we talk about our experience with this film, I'll bring that up.
Okay.
That's...
So, the Village Voice's Mark Holcomb wrote that the film resembles, quote, a pastiche of 70s American slasher flicks that seemingly stands to hold to the worldwide glut of nostalgic sequels, remakes, and retreads, unquote. Ultimately seeing it as, quote, gratifying, gory, doggedly intellectual deacon of the likes of The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween, and surprisingly but aptly, Duel, unquote.
Hey, he went full all syllables in that one, didn't he?
He was like, how many cool words can I put into this?
Roger was like, philosopher said, this might be shitty, and at the end, yep, shitty. This guy's just like, alliteration and...
This guy said, I live in New York. Yeah. Fancy shit.
Oh,
anyway,
funny.
So moving on to Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. This bad boy has an average of 3.2 out of 5 stars out of 13,000 ratings.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Dude.
It's very divisive.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun. I say that because... Josh Lewis, with 3 stars, says, quote, I don't think that's how lesbianism works. Anyway, did you see that dude's head pop off? Unquote. Sarah, with 4 stars, says, quote, I mean, maybe I could talk myself into liking the twist ending, but it felt really forced. The first 2/3 of this film are incredibly intense and brutal and fantastic, though. Unquote.
Okay.
Cat with 5 stars. I don't give a fuck. I love this, and I can't believe I managed to get away with not getting spoiled on the ending, even though this has been out for over a decade now. Top tier shit. Good shit. Alexandra Aja is a good ass time.
Oh, Cat, that's a good one. Uh-huh. I dig that.
I will be honest, these reviews were not fun. They're very divisive. Everyone's angry. No one's happy. And if they are, they're like, whatever, it's a movie. So, like, on Letterboxd, they were just like... Everyone was upset.
Damn.
And angry, and no one liked the ending. Like, literally no one liked the ending.
Interesting.
Like, I think I saw maybe... Okay, that's kind of a lie. I saw, like, because people are going to send me reviews on Letterboxd and be like, this person liked the ending.
Yeah,
okay, I'm exaggerating for comedy, because whatever. Some people liked the ending, but the overall consensus was that they did not like the ending.
Interesting.
So, with that... Let's get into the discussion of the movie.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. So, I'm interested in your thoughts here. What'd you think?
I liked this movie so much more the first time I saw it. Like, I
really?
Am so fucking disappointed the second time around. I did not like it. Like, I was watching it and I was like, this is dog shit.
Wow. I have the opposite reaction.
What?
Yeah, I liked it more.
Wow.
Explain, please. No,
okay.
Get into it.
So... I think everyone should see this movie. Like, I appreciate it. It is a beautifully, I will say that.
It is a wonderfully shot film.
Like Aja has such an eye for, like, detail and, like, shots. Like, he is a good director. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to, like, shit on his directorial skills. Like, he is a good director. I just did not enjoy it the second time around. I don't know why. Like, maybe...
Huh.
I wanted to. I really wanted to because I picked this movie.
Yeah.
I fucking picked this movie.
Like, God damn it. I expected more.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just like...
Like, what about it where you're just like, oh, fucking A. Like what parts where you're like rolling your eyes or just like, ah, I'm not into this.
Because I was able to watch this the whole time knowing the plot twist at the end.
So you were finding gaps in the logic?
Huge. Like literally the Roger Ebert review, I was just like, yeah, there's the plot hole I'm driving that truck through.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is definitely a turn your brain the fuck off movie, though.
I was high when I watched it.
Oh, well, fucking A.
I literally, like, oh my.
You're like, this is making me sober, goddammit.
Okay, yes. So, literally. it made me so angry, it made me sober.
Damn. You're all pacing as shit's happening. You're like, what the... Why is the CCTV... Oh.
No, I wanted to like it. And there were parts that I did like. Like, there are certain scenes that are shot really well. And, like, I do like, and I, again, I sincerely wish I was able to watch it in French because it just sounds so much better. The dubbed version is shit.
Fucking horrible, dude.
And it also could be the fact that I watched it in English this time. Maybe. The first time I watched it, it was totally in French.
It makes it a little more grating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I think also, like, I'm just so tired of, like, the violent, mentally ill trope. Like someone who's mentally ill being violent. Or just, like, multiple personalities leading to, like, someone being a killer. And then also, like, you know, violent queers. And I'm just like, come on. I'm just, like, I'm kind of overseeing that in horror movies. Also, just, you know, psychotic women in general. Like, I'm like, okay, we get it. Like, you've made your point.
I was kind of okay with having a female killer, like, at last.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's so many dude fucking killers. Right. Like, I'm like, nah, dude, let her have it.
Okay, like, I'm cool with it if it's, like, not tied into, like, her being a killer because she wants another woman. Like, mm-hmm. I'm cool with it if it's, like, not tied into her queerness. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
That makes sense, yeah.
Like, if she, like, I'm cool with, like, when we did, what's it called? Trilogy of Terror.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of those. Like, there was, like, the first one. Mm-hmm. What's her face? Like, with the...
Yeah.
She was a fucking serial killer.
Femme Fatale.
The Femme Fatale chick. Like, that was cool. Like, I like, that kind of,
well,
like,
that was
reversal.
Like, revenge porn, essentially, right there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. Is, like, I'm cool with, and I really like the reversals of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think with this, I think it was just, like, stigmatizing people with mental illness, and I think it was stigmatizing LGBT people. And that was a lot of the things that were mirrored in the Letterboxd reviews that I was just like, I'm not gonna...
Interesting.
Yeah. So, that was, like, my thoughts watching it, where I was just like, this is kind of fucked up. Is it a bit of a problematic fave? Yes. Like, did I enjoy the movie? Mostly. I just didn't enjoy it as much the second time around. Mm-hmm. And that's what was disappointing, is, like, I wanted
you
to like
it. You expected a different experience than what you got.
Because in my head, I put it on this pedestal as, like, this so, like, mind-blowing, cool, French, graphic, bloody, like, gratuitous movie that's just, mm-hmm. like, in your face. And I like those movies. Like, I mean, I like torture porn. I like...
Yeah, you know,
those
I figured it'd be kind of in your ballpark,
like,
there.
It is. It technically, this movie is in my ballpark. But it just didn't hit the mark the same way... Like, the first time
it Well, the first time, it's, like, a whole different experience and subsequent viewing.
And I think I just kind of put it too high on a
Well, this is only
pedestal.
Your second viewing, huh? And it was, like, years apart, I imagine.
The first time I watched it was... It only had to have been within the past 3 years.
Oh, okay. Not that bad, then.
No. Well, yeah, the first time I watched it was when I lived in my other apartment.
Okay. Well, shit. Okay, then, yeah, not that far at all.
No.
Fuck.
I mean, I've lived in this complex for 3 years, so...
Damn. What? Time fucking flies. Jesus. Ugh. Well, I like this movie. This might
please,
actually...
Please, I digress. Please.
No, this actually might be, though. I've seen it a lot.
Okay.
Like, I've seen it a lot.
Okay.
I think I saw it last time was maybe, like, within the past year, for sure.
Really?
I think me and Sydney watched
it. So you just, like, watched it for fun?
Yeah.
Did Sydney like it?
Sydney loved this movie. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but then again, like, I didn't, you know, identify those issues when I watched it. To me, it's just... Horror tropes.
I mean, of course you didn't.
Yeah, I did. Well, to me, it looks like it's just, that's what horror does, I guess.
Right, but you also don't see yourself in any of these characters.
I don't. No, I don't. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. But I mean, like, again, it's just one of those things where I always find it interesting because it's a really, really well-filmed, like, movie. Like, in terms of what it does for slashers.
Totally.
Like, it uses those 70s tropes and it, like,
it
does it in a very enhanced, well-paced kind of way, which, as to me, I kind of, from a filmmaking perspective, I really admire the way they handle the gore, the way they handle the terror, and the twist becomes less relevant the more you watch it. It's more of just a device to, like, oh, look, there's a punchline or a little exclamation point at the end of the film for me. But the first time I watched it, I was like, so when I first watched this, I think it was 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like really close to it being available on DVD. One of my cousins showed it to me, and she was like, "Oh, you guys got to check this fucking movie out." Blah, blah. She owned it, and she like literally was just like, "Yeah, here you go." And we're like, "Oh, this is cool. And we were watching it because, you know, we're a horror family and we love slashers and like we watch scary movies. That's just what we do. And this was like, I think I was just so blown away. Not because the twist blows you away the first time before you have to think about it.
Right.
But then it was like all those things you look for in a slasher done to like a very, very extreme, like crossing the line kind of manner that,
I hear that.
It's impressive. It's impressive that they kind of pulled that off and like made you like wince from these things you're used to seeing in a million other movies.
Here's the thing. Even though it's been 3 years or however long, I mean, it's probably only been like two since mm-hmm. the last time I saw this movie, I still jumped twice.
Yeah. No, same here.
Like, I mean, the movie still makes you jump. Like, it still builds tension. Mm-hmm. But that's real well. I think for me, one of the things that was like rough watching the movie, and maybe it's just one of those things that'll fade the more times if I give it another shot,
mm-hmm.
is like watching Marie be scared, and I'm just like, I know you're not actually scared. Like, it's just,
yeah,
like it was just like that. Like, there was like disconnect because,
well,
like,
they spent a lot of the movie on her being scared,
exactly, yeah. and that's kind of like hard for me to like, because like it was for me watching, like I was just kind of like rolling my eyes, like I was like, fuck off, like, you know what I mean, like because I know
there's no tension there after that point,
exactly,
yeah,
because like I know the truth,
yeah,
and no. So you know, like the scene that's like really, really tense with like her being under the bed with like the killer looking for her the first time.
Oh yeah, that was completely removed from me.
Yeah,
in terms of watching,
exactly,
it. Yeah.
Exactly. Like when I was like, that was, and it's because it's so early in the movie,
mm-hmm.
it just kind of set the tone for the rest of the movie for me, where I was just like, who fucking gives a shit?
Well, scene in particular, actually, mm-hmm. I remember thinking like when she did her little like leg thingy to
hide.
He only did half of it, whatever.
Yeah.
To me, it was like, oh, because in her mind, she wouldn't actually get caught.
Like,
that's what's
like,
happening.
What would happen
right there.
If she
yeah.
got caught? Like,
well, that's the thing. That's just her. That's her mind contextualizing it.
Of
so
course.
No matter what's going to happen, she's not going to get affected by it. So she's just going around her excuse to get this shit done.
And it does. I think on the. I mean, looking for positives, I guess, in a sea of negatives for me. I guess it does kind of make it a fun film to pick apart in that sense. Because
yeah.
as I was watching that scene, I was like, how are they even doing this? Like, how, like, because, like, you watch it with, like, the safety of knowing that, like, there's mm-hmm. no way she's going to get caught.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's why I was interested in, like, okay, well, how is she barely going to get around
away?
This?
Yeah,
with,
like,
and they really kind of push that line, too.
Yeah.
But then it also, it is kind of a cop-out sometimes, too, because you're like, oh, yeah, it's all in her head. Whatever thing didn't make sense, that was just her head reasoning for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's almost like a weird eraser on what just happened for certain scenes.
Yeah.
But that's probably why I like the house area scenes the most, because that's the family getting taken out.
And that's the thing. Like, the farmhouse scenes, like, make... I mean, in my opinion, like, the first... That beginning part of the movie is what makes the movie so scary. Because mm-hmm. you have, like, that's where you have the most blood and the most, like, gore, and it's scary.
It's the most slashery.
Yeah, totally. Because mm-hmm. you have, well, also, you have those home invasion elements that make, you know, like, so many horror films so fucking scary.
Mm-hmm.
Home invasion films scare the shit out of me. I mean, as we've talked about many, many times before.
Yeah.
but yeah, so I think that kind of made it got me out of my head mm-hmm. a lot when I was watching the movie. Like, it made it really hard for me to just, like, you know.
Yeah, because it's all irrelevant kind of feeling.
Well, it just, as I was watching it, like, I was just like, I couldn't get into the characters as much.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks, because, like, I'm such a, like, a character driven, like, if you have good characters, I'll like the movie. Or if mm-hmm. you have, like, believable, like, characters, it makes the movie, like, you know, even if it's, like, kind of on plot,
yeah.
like, I can fill in, you know.
See, that's the thing. I think the characters, you're right, because they become less and less significant. But I think that's probably why, at this point watching it, I'm just like, ah, they're just fucking people. Like,
well, that's the thing, is, like, I think probably the more you watch it, the more you know, the characters, and even to a lesser degree, the script, and, like...
Yeah, that's all thrown out the window.
Yeah, it becomes ancillary.
Ancillary, perfect. Yeah. Yeah, then it's more about, like, the execution
yeah.
of
and it becomes,
what they do.
Yeah, and it becomes, you know, looking at, like, the special effects and, you know, how mm-hmm. it was filmed. Because, like, I found myself looking at that a lot more. Because, mm-hmm. like, the special effects, like, I mean,
dude,
they're...
hold up.
They're very practical. I mean, they're definitely practical. Like, mm-hmm. you can tell, like, just from how it's shot. And they're very well done. Again, also because they hold up so well, you can tell they're practical.
Yeah.
And then... there's that, and just, you know, how it's shot and the interesting techniques that they use. Like,
it's a very cool take on the slasher. Like, for if you like slashers, then this is about, like, you can dissect it as hell watching it. Like, holy fuck.
For sure.
They did this trope like this, and that was effective.
Yeah.
And just in terms of the technique, I guess. But then I think what made this better for me, though, was I watched it with my roommate who hadn't seen it.
And I wanted to ask your experience of that. How did he react?
Oh, he was like, because he's kind of a survivalist a little bit.
Okay.
Christian's fucking awesome. And so he was like, oh, well, if she wants to get out of this, this is the technique you do. Like, he was like that having the theater experience, like, oh, fucking don't go there. Like that kind of thing. But when the twist came, he was like, what the fuck? it like blew his mind a little bit. I'm just like, oh, I got to experience the first time of it with someone else.
And
so I got that set, like, that made it a better experience.
I think that's part of the joy of showing this movie to other people for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you get to see them, lose their shit. And I think that's fun.
That made it a way, way better view, though I've seen it, like, a million times.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But then it makes me realize, too, because me and Sydney watched it, like, a few months ago. Maybe within a year, I can't remember. But we stopped watching after, I think, the house invasion scene, just because we're like, oh, I know, whatever. Like, we just liked seeing the action, essentially. So, yeah, it's a good first time watch for sure. You're not going to have the same experience after
like
that.
Like I said.
You're not.
I think everyone should watch this movie once. If you were absolutely repulsed, disgusted, hated it with every fiber of your being the first time, then you don't have to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
I think watch it once. If you liked it, cool, watch it twice just to make sure. And then if you absolutely hated it, you know, just keep watching it until you absolutely hate it. just keep checking just to make sure.
I'm so sad.
It's not that I hate. I mean, I feel like I'm coming off a little too strong.
There's
like,
some problematic elements, though, that are very clearly on display.
Yes.
Very clearly on display.
So, like I said.
I didn't notice them until now. So, yeah.
It's a bit of a problematic fave, like I said. Like, there are elements that I do enjoy about this movie. And I did enjoy watching it to a degree. Like I said, I'm going to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
I think I just need to make sure that I'm watching it with subtitles.
Yeah.
And I'm not, like, it
no,
literally,
please, like,
the dubbed version is absolutely garbage.
Let's talk about it, because that dub is bad, dude. Like, everybody's voice is a goddamn cartoon voice.
It's
a cartoon French person.
It sounds like a French anime.
It does. Pepe Le Pew fucking in there just...
It just sounds like it's a French anime character.
It's Alex!
It's so bad. Like, it is just not... It's not done well, and I'm just watching it. And then it's to the point where it's just... And also, like, I understand French, so I'm watching them mouthing the words in French, and I know what they're mouthing in French.
With the logical inconsistencies and the problem, like, this is all the formula not for you right now.
Like literally my whole brain, like, and I'm stoned, so I'm just sitting there just like,
fuck you, movie. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Oh,
it's a whole different experience with this one. This is amazing.
Completely different.
Yeah.
And
I was pretty drunk, though. I was pretty, like, I was rocking two IPAs, and I hadn't drank all week, so I was just like, hey, let's check this shit out.
You guys heard about Switchblade Romance?
And then I played Animal Crossing. It was a whole, it was a nice Saturday. It was fun.
That's awesome.
Was it Friday? When did we watch it?
You watched it?
No, yesterday was Saturday. Yesterday was Smash Brothers Day.
Friday.
Fucking A.
You watched it Friday. All the days blend together.
They do. They totally fucking do. Ugh.
But anyway, so what is your... I mean, I we kind of talked about this, but your previous experience with French with New French Extremity, have you seen Martyrs? Have you seen any of the other movies
Attention,
mentioned?
That's it.
So this is your first real delve.
This is my exclusive foray into this particular genre, yes.
Are you interested in...
Oh, more. Absolutely.
In additional films? I think I'm curious in how you're going to react to the other... to similar films, because Martyrs is like the other quintessential New French
Extremity. It's the one I've heard about name-wise everywhere.
In my gender and horror film class in college, the one I talk about all the time, the one that got me into film theory or horror film theory, I had a week where we had to watch Martyrs and we had to watch Antichrist. That was the assignment that week. So to get an idea of what Martyrs is like, it was paired with Antichrist.
Jesus fucking Christ. Nah. Nah.
Just to get an idea.
Dude.
One day, well, no, I know Antichrist is on the list of movies we will never cover.
We might have to, though.
Because I know Adrian.
Yeah, well, you're bringing Adrian in.
Because I know Adrian would love to talk about it. Ugh. But I think...
But then we have to watch it again. That's going to be the tough part.
I've technically never finished it.
I can't, me either. I can't. Like, I literally shit happens. I'm like, fuck this.
Click.
Click. Done.
Done. Bye.
Bye, Netflix. I'm going to actually cancel my subscription. Fuck that. Why would you put this movie on here?
So, yeah. So, if you want, and I read the Wikipedia synopsis for Martyrs, and I was just like, I'm just terrified of this movie.
Yeah, I've been totally blind on this one.
Don't. Just go into it blind.
Okay.
Oh, God, you're going to be so fucked up by this.
All right, cool. We'll put it on the list at some point.
But, yeah. So, okay. So.
So, how would you quantify New French Extremity then? Like, review it? Like, what do you think of the genre?
I'm very interested in it. I don't have as much experience to have, like, a super, super formulated opinion. Mm-hmm. The Ryan Hollinger video does a really good job of, like, summarizing it because he also talks about movies like 29 Palms, which is, like, more, like, later, like, new. It's, like, the movement that came right after New French Extremity, and I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head. But 29 Palms is kind of, like, it came right after that, and like kind of it's a very similar deal, but like that culmination of violence and sex and gratuity and like just all of that is very prevalent in this type of genre.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's very fun to like explore and read about, and it's just I don't know. It's very interesting to me, and I do want to watch more.
Yeah, I'm interested in more.
Too. It takes a lot out of you. Is the one issue where it's like you gotta be all good in the hood. You know what I mean?
I'm barely good in the hood.
Well, that's the thing though, is like being all there, and then you know sitting down to watch like a movie that you know is gonna like fuck you up.
Yeah, that's when you bring Animal Crossing out. I get you. Sorry, I'm obsessed.
You're obsessed. I can't tell if you're just obsessed and you're trying to talk about it, or you're trying to just like bully me into getting Animal Crossing.
A little column A, a little column B. It could be two things.
As the French say. Pourquoi pas les deux?
What does that mean? Fuck off?
Why not both?
Oh, okay.
it's like pourquoi no los dos?
Okay. That makes sense.
I just said it in French because I'm an asshole.
Oh my gosh.
So this isn't the first time we've covered Aja's work. How would you... I mean, this is... Obviously, we talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. But how would this compare to his work on The Hills Have Eyes remake? Like, would you say that they're similar or different? What would you...
They're similar, but this one's more like a... Definitely his original take on something like a Halloween or like a slasher. The twist, again, it's like, it's there. It's mind-blowing the first time. It's just kind of part of the film later on. But I still would prefer Hills Have Eyes just in the sense that you never, ever get a remake that is that much better than the original. And Aja's style with a budget is fucking cool. Like... It's weird. They're both two different parts of him.
In my opinion, like, they're completely different movies.
They're totally different. They're totally different.
Like, the only real similarities I can really see is just, like, the violence. And that's...
Yeah.
Like,
it's his style.
Right. But that's... is the violence the signature, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the coloring's different. I mean, some of the shooting, like, that's the one... I mean, I will say, I think I talked about this in the Hills Have Eyes episode, but, it was shot very well.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Fucking amazingly.
Yeah. The Hills Have Eyes remake was shot very, very well. So I will give him that. Like, he is a good director. But yeah. I mean, it's like apples to oranges for
it
me.
Is. I mean, and the thing also, too, is like, The Hills Have Eyes, it doesn't have the twist that it's going to be on your mind while you're rewatching it. So when you rewatch The Hills Have Eyes, it's more along the lines of seeing it as its own thing. Like, it doesn't change.
Strangely... for some reason in my head, Hills Have Eyes is like tone wise just feels, I mean, dark, but like, and then High Tension is like all dark. Yeah. All the time. Like, it is just a dark movie. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, Hills of Ice is like one of those like post 9/11 Bush era movies we were talking about before.
And we're going to
American flag being.
We are going to talk about that also. That's another question.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, now we have to talk.
Yeah, let's do it. If I can get into it then.
But how do you feel like New French Extremity, or even this movie in particular, compares to the post 9/11 torture porn movement in horror in America?
Dude, okay, so watching this and then Ginger Snaps back to back.
Yeah.
You see that.
You can see the line, you know? Dude,
okay, like huge though. Like huge. Like even like something like Scream 3, now that I think about it. But like that post-Columbine, pre-9/11 style horror,
yeah,
which is not necessarily theme-driven. It's more, I guess the scale is significantly smaller,
mm-hmm.
but there's a kookiness to it that comes with being from the 90s and things like that. That's gone. That shit's gone.
Oh, yeah.
There's no, like, hey, let's wink and like, oh, here's a snarky blah, blah, blah. Afterwards, it's just
I'm gonna
like.
I'm going to walk slow-mo down the hall of my high school with my hair flowing in the back because I'm hot now because I'm wearing a tight-fit t-shirt.
Yeah, there's no B story. There's no B intertwining plots and like, oh, this character's doing this and this is doing this and this is like the journey of an individual. There's more like, these are people that are just like really grounded and they're going to be fucked up by some really grounded violence.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to push the limits. So there you go. Like,
enjoy your blood.
Yeah, exactly. The movies are shorter, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's true.
No, yeah, post 9/11, they get way shorter.
They're just like, you got time is money. Let's go.
90 minutes. There you go. We can only afford so many special effects. So, no, this New French Extremity, like, really plays into it. I mean, it feels like it's, like, a more unchained version of the polished horror.
Yeah.
Polished torture porn. Torture porn with a budget. It's less.
Well, even then, this doesn't even have, like, the budget.
No, it has that kind of, like, underground renegade kind of feel.
It has an indie feel to it. Yeah. And I think that's something that I do really appreciate in, like, the feel for the mm-hmm. movie. And I think that's why I like this more in terms of, like, or why I like, you know, non-American horror films
exactly.
so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Because they usually have less money, which means because of it, they have significantly, you know, more of that, like, indie feel to it.
They gotta make it work.
Yeah,
they do.
But I think it gives it that like not rustic. I don't want to say rustic, but they have like this like I don't know heart to it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. The grime feels like grime.
Yeah,
it's not like fake grime.
Yeah, it's not. It's not like you know upper middle class you know kids pretending to be poor because it's fun to do when you're in college and then you know what I mean.
Yeah, it doesn't have the polish. Like the polish actually feels unpolished.
Yeah.
Well, I think about it too. Think the difference between Saw 1 and 2. Like how Saw 1 feels when they didn't quite know what it was going to be versus Saw 2, which is like, look how bright and blah, 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 and dynamic our angles are.
Jesus Christ.
And blah, blah, blah.
That's a great comparison. Like, I mean, I've been thinking about Saw, but like mm-hmm. really like that dichotomy between Saw 1 and Saw 2, like, Jesus Christ. Like, Saw 1 is so fucking good. And then the second one is just like, how flashy can we be?
How flashy can we be? Exactly. But, like, still, like, show you every little fucking detail we can.
Yeah, and show you how fucking graphic we can be.
And no humor. Again, like, post 9/11,
also,
humor was taken from horror.
Director of Saw mm-hmm. in the Splat Pack.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
And speaking of the Splat Pack, members of the Splat Pack all kind of have a knack for making nods to the classics. Do you like seeing this in these movies?
Already yes.
No question. So, because, like, we see this in, we saw it in Cabin Fever.
Mm-hmm.
We see it in
the Raimi nods in there.
Yes. Super, super, super heavy on,
which
like,
is why
the
humor
Dead.
Works.
Yeah, on the Evil Dead, you know. And then this one, obviously, Texas Chainsaw, mm-hmm. very heavy on the Texas Chainsaw. So you don't think it's gratuitous or, you know.
I mean, I grew up with these movies. So to see, like, them utilize, it feels like a wink that like, I acknowledged when I was younger. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah.
I think what's interesting, and I don't know if this is just, like, it leads to maybe some condescension
mm-hmm.
coming from horror fans, but it feels like an inside joke.
It does. No, it does.
It totally does.
It
feels like a little, like, elbow nudge from the director to mm-hmm. people who are, you know, I don't want to say real fans of the genre.
No, they're in the know.
But, you know, like, you know, passionate fans of the genre who are able to be like, I see what you were going for, and I see who you were trying to emulate, and I appreciate it.
Well, that, and I think what it also does, it like moves the meta forward.
Mm-hmm.
So how those things are typically done, it moves that forward, because movies repeat. Yeah. They all repeat. Like we're getting the same stories here and there with very few original in between that helps push. But when they repeat the same beats, but do it in their way, in a way that elevates it and distinguishes it from the old one, then it's kind of cool to acknowledge and see how that happens and see the differences between both. Which you'll, you know, obviously if you're in the know and you watch a lot of it, it's cool to see. I mean, you see a million fucking Friday the 13ths. And then you see this, and you're like, okay, that's how you do that kill now.
That's better. That's how you do a graphic kill in a way that, like, does the movie justice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so I kind of talked about this earlier, but the movie touches on some really, I mean, like, for lack of a better word, touchy topics.
Yeah.
But we talked about, you know, like, killer queers, violent multiple personalities. Like, Split has come out in recent years.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is a very common trope in horror films. Someone has multiple personalities. We talked about it earlier. I did the same thing. Like, I literally did the same movement. The one with Karen Black.
Yeah, Rape Revenge? Revenge?
Yeah. Those movies.
Yeah.
That movie. What's the movie?
Trilogy of Terror.
Thank you. Trilogy of Terror. Multiple personalities. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, I think we see that, I mean, throughout horror films.
Yeah.
It's very, very common. Mm-hmm. It's very common now, because everyone kind of has this, like, fascination with it for some reason.
Yeah.
Do you think it ages the film in a negative way?
Well, now I do.
now that it has been brought to your attention.
Well, that's the thing, though, too. Like, it's one of those things I think a lot of horror fans, like, it's just, like, what we were saying before, what it does with tropes. Like, oh, that's a different take on a trope that you're generally is a default.
Right.
Like, it's a default that you're typically used to, kind of like the teenage sex thing and all this stuff like that. Like, it's, you know, so when you see some, I wouldn't say elevation of it, but, like, a enhanced kind of, like, more...
A reinterpretation.
Stylistic reinterpretation of that, then you're like, okay, cool. That was interesting.
But you don't think about it.
But you don't. That's because it is a default. Because it is kind of a basis for where the genre kind of, I think, is at a base level.
Okay.
So when it's... But the thing is, like, when you see movies like Get Out or whatever it is, like, that take those tropes and, like, comment on it. Then
in a way, in your face kind of way.
Well, in a way that, like, you acknowledge the role. You're like, oh, okay, cool. Didn't realize that before. So, yeah, but this one just takes those little things and is like, no, we're going to run with it to the extreme, actually.
No, I'm actually, I'm appreciating your insights on this, because it actually does bring, it makes it all make sense.
Yeah, see, the thing is, like, again, I don't know if it's a question necessarily on, it's just not on everybody's minds, because it's so ingrained, I think, in the genre. But, I mean...
But then having to have these conversations where it's like...
It's good to notice.
It is. Because, like, then it's just like, okay, well, this is kind of like, we should probably move past this. You know, like, these are tropes that, like...
Well, I mean, it was also almost 2 decades ago. So we flew pretty far.
I understand. Yes. But also, I mean, you know, I think what you were talking about earlier, where it's kind of, you know, putting tropes, you know, turning tropes on their heads by making, like, the main villain a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's very, very common, especially now where it's like, ooh, girl power.
Yeah.
They can be killers, too.
They can be killers, too. Yeah, again.
But taking that, like, that's super, super common. But then also, they took the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
including predatory male behaviors, including, like, I love you. No one else can have you. I'm going to be creepy about it and kill your entire family and kidnap you. Like, they just took the whole thing. And then when you do that from a female gaze versus a male gaze, it makes it, it adds that extra layer of, like, homophobia on top of it just being creepy as hell.
See, that's weird, though. Like, I don't know. I never... acknowledge the homophobia part, just because, like, in my mind, I'm just like, I wouldn't be homophobic towards anybody. Like, like, so you know, that thing doesn't graze, though.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're like, oh, okay, well,
it doesn't
yeah.
even occur to
it
you.
Doesn't yeah it's not
right.
a thing.
But if you're watching this, and let's say, like, obviously I'm not saying children should watch this movie, but if you're like, you know,
children should not watch this movie.
No. But if you're like, let's say, you know, you're watching this movie and you're still developing certain opinions, like this can mm-hmm. still be influential on your opinions on queer people.
Yeah.
In terms of
that
like,
makes sense.
Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In terms of like what behavior should and shouldn't look like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where people have issues with it. Obviously, you know. Anyway, I could go on. I digress.
No, but yeah, this is good. I'm learning.
But, I mean, a lot of this ties into stuff that we've talked about in the past where it's like, you know, by making the villain of a movie queer, you're kind of not so subtly saying, you know, being queer is bad.
Well, that and there are is a severe lack in horror, especially of queer heroes.
Yeah.
They're just not there. No, they're just like not
unless
there.
It's like Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
Yeah. But they're like ancillary characters yeah. for the most part, you know? So like it's because that's where I can see like, oh
totally.
Right, the lack of like representation, not necessarily to be corrective, but to at least have. Like yeah. There's a difference between like overcorrecting whatever it is and blah, 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 and then just having something. Because, again, as a Latino male, we don't have a lot of heroes either. We're
right.
the side fucking character. So whenever right. I'd see Antonio Banderas and fucking Desperado and shit, this kid, I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. He looks like somebody I know.
Right.
But, you know, otherwise it's always like, oh, cool. Yeah, we're another fucking gangster. That's nice.
Yeah. No, yeah, and it's that idea of seeing yourself in characters mm-hmm. that are important or characters that matter. It's that mm-hmm. whole idea about representation, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it all ends up boiling down. To answer the question for myself, I think that is one of the few things that ages the film in a negative way.
No, like, I mean, that makes
like,
sense.
How the film is shot and how it, like I said, the special effects. Like, otherwise, it is like, this movie could have been made 3-5 years ago and I would have been like, okay. Other than like the clothes.
Yeah, no.
The clothes are very early 2000s, but that's fine. I can forgive that.
And the muse fucking.
That's true. Oh my god, the muse. Jesus Lord.
Oh man.
But yeah, so this is a very good conversation. I'm really glad
this is good. Exactly. Again, I'm not gonna shy away. Like, no, you're wrong, Alex. This movie's perfect. Yeah, she stays under the bed for like 20 minutes.
Whatever.
And it means nothing.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's kind of my thoughts on it. I'm very glad that I was able to get your thoughts on it because I was very curious about where this conversation was going to go. But I also learned a lot. So.
No, I mean, I think it's one of those things that there's not enough of it out there for people to have that thing come across their mind.
It's true.
It just isn't.
It's true.
And anyway. Probably because movies like this can keep playing into those tropes. So it's
yeah.
just like, oh, okay, well, this is just default, right?
Right. And it's until, you know, like, writers and producers and directors, like, are able to, like, be like, okay, wait, stop, hold mm-hmm. on. Like, let's think about this for a second and what this means and also have it. Because, like, you didn't think about it until, you know, someone who has that lived experience was able to bring it up and be like, hey, this is weird or this isn't right. So I think that's also why it's important that we have, you know, more queer or, you know, LGBT writers, directors, producers, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's one of those things too, where it's like, this is not right and it keeps happening. Like that, it doesn't stop. It's not stopping.
And you can still drive the point home. Like mm-hmm. you can still make the point that you're trying to make. Like this movie still could have made the same points that it was trying to make
mm-hmm.
without, you know, being is the predatory, like being the predatory lesbian tropes that it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it could have been done. And I just think that it's still, I mean, again, problematic fave.
Yeah.
It's all, and we've said this before, we'll say it again, you can still appreciate something and acknowledge its faults.
Yeah, possible. Very possible.
And I will say that forever and ever and ever. But anyway,
it's a very rickety fucked up roller coaster. This movie, that's what it is.
I agree, rickety fucked up roller coaster with lots and lots and lots of.
You're like, shouldn't you have better safety precautions? Like, well, it's still fun.
It is that 80-year-old wooden roller coaster that should have been shut down years ago, but you still go on it because it's very fun.
And they're like, don't smoke cigarettes next to it; it'll catch on fire,
and then we'll all die.
Yep.
Final Destination 3. Anyway. Wow, we still haven't done Final Destination movies.
Yeah, well, we're saving it. Well, we'll see.
We're holding on to it. Anyway, what... Total subject change.
Mm-hmm.
What was your kill of the film?
Oh, good old Papa Staircase.
Oh.
That was a fucked up kill, dude.
The mom, for me. That one, like, fucked me up.
It lingers, too.
I jumped like a motherfucker. When she, like, when Marie, like leans over her and she, like, jumps and, like, she makes, like, that gasping gurgle breath. Like, that. I jumped. Like, I literally, like, jerked. Like, I was like, nope.
See, that's the thing with this movie, too. It's like, all the kills are good.
It's true.
They're all little fucking boy. Like, the way you do child death is actually kind of in this film. Like,
okay.
Out in the field and...
The child... Okay, child death warning.
Yeah.
So, in this movie, you know, obvious... Well, not obviously, but the family, there's, like, a small child. And I don't remember him being in the movie until I watched it for the second time. And I was just like, oh, no, he's gonna die horribly. Mm-hmm. And I will say... To the benefit of Aja, they don't. It is not a graphic.
No,
he goes peacefully. Well, as peacefully as you can in the splatter film, I suppose. Yeah. But
it's stylistically done in a way that's not like, hey, look at this kid fucking blown away.
It is sad, and it is emotionally impactful.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think that. Kind of made it better, I think, for the movie. It also, I will say, quick side note, I did some research on the movie before watching it for the second time, and one of the things that kind of helped me get through it the second time without completely losing my shit and, like, being like, plot hole, hello, was Aja said that the entire movie is from the perspective of Marie in the hospital saying what happened from her, like... imagination.
Oh, okay.
So basically this is like her interpretation of events.
Of the events, yeah.
So when people like kind of challenge him with plot holes, it's just like, he's just like, well, technically this is how, like, it's her.
I showed you her in the hospital in the first frame, all right? Fuck you.
Yeah. And that's basically like his whole thing is just like, he is, or Marie is like recounting the events of the movie. Or recounting the events of the night.
Yeah.
And then, because, like, once she gets stabbed through the arm or through the shoulder, it cuts back to the hospital, right? And then that's because, like, that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
So that was kind of what was helping me sort through the plot holes where I'm just like, how are they in the same room together?
See, that helps me too when I was watching it also.
How can she be downstairs or upstairs hearing Alex getting like tortured or like tied up below and screaming when she's upstairs? And I'm like, oh, because she thinks she's upstairs, but she's doing it, and she was just making it make sense in her own brain.
That's what I was thinking when I was watching it. It's her version making sense of it in her own brain.
Yeah,
so when I heard the screaming, I was like, oh, because they're going to show later on.
She's making it make sense. And that kind of helped me piece it together in a way that wasn't absolutely like total garbage.
Mm-hmm.
but yeah, I think that helped as much as it could have. But yeah, so I think the mom for me was definitely the kill of the film.
Yeah, I'll say even Gas Station Boy, like, this movie makes an axe
chop. The axe in the chest, I was just like, and then, like, the putting him on the ground and then stepping on his back, like, I was like, Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah, even a kill like that, one swing. Any other movie, it's like, oh yeah, cool, look at it, look what Jason did. But this one, like, it's like, holy fuck.
Yeah, like, it's very graphic, it's very intense. Like, all the kills, like, they were in... That's the one thing, well, not, I mean, I keep saying that. That's the one thing, no. That's another thing that this movie does, add to the rewatchability of it, is all of the kills still have the same emotional gravitas.
Yes, they do. They're very impactful impacts.
Okay, so I guess wrapping up, final question. How would you rate this film out of 5 crowbars through the shoulder?
Oh, I was prepared to give it a 4, but after our discussion, I'm going to knock it down a little bit, 3.5.
Okay.
I have to now. And I'm thinking about it, I'm like, all right, fuck.
I appreciate your reevaluation. 2.5.
Okay, 2.5. That's right down the middle right there.
Straight down
I can totally see this as a 2.5 for you.
Yeah, this is a 2.5. I was thinking about it last night, and I was just like, this is a 2.5.
Yeah, makes sense. Oh, man, we were so excited last week.
You
were more excited than me.
I was really stoked. And unfortunately... you know what? Opinions change.
They do. We grow.
We all grow. Mm-hmm. We learned a lot this week. I will also say that when I first watched this movie, I enjoyed film theory in the almost 2 years we've been doing this podcast. Uh-huh. I've learned a lot more, and yeah. I've seen many more horror films. So I think it's more of a testament to my taste in horror.
There you go. It's elevated at this point.
It is changed. Elevated. I don't want to. Yeah, sure. Let's say that.
But however.
Next.
April's done.
Guys, we made it through April. I'm so glad you guys are all staying the fuck home and staying safe.
Life's
and
been a little fucky.
Life has been, yes, fucky is the best way to describe that. Life has been fucky at absolute, yeah, best.
Yeah. However, we got a treat for you guys next month. We got a theme going, baby.
We
got a
theme. Do we want to tell them?
Yeah, I'm fucking telling them right now.
Okay.
Monster May.
Oh, I'm so excited.
We are covering all kinds of fundamental monster movies in horror, actually.
Some fundamentals, some contemporaries.
Yes, and just a lot of big dogs. And one pretty campy one that's going to be a lot of fun.
Guys, it is going to be so much fun. I cannot wait. We planned this forever ago. But before even quarantine started.
Yeah.
But because we were just like, oh, summer's coming up. Let's do something fun. But yeah, so this is going to be a fun little exercise in, you know, getting out of our heads and thinking about the world not being on absolute fire outside.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, we haven't done a theme in a while. So, you know, a lot of fun.
We haven't. And
not
we
since Love Month.
and your birthday month.
Oh, that's true. That's not a theme. That's just me taking holds right there.
It's true. Well, next month, I mean, obviously is May. And then the month after that is
that's
my
birthday month. Yeah.
So we have so many fun plans coming up, and I'm very excited to share them all with you. I think that's it.
That's it.
So that was High Tension from 2003, directed by Alexandra Aja. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to that. This was actually the most fun I've had recording an episode in a while. Like, this was, like, a particular delight.
Right.
Like, I always have fun recording, but this was particularly a joy.
You got into it.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please, please, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It helps tremendously, and it keeps us all boosted in the charts and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you want to find us on social media, we are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod, so you can find us there. And then we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE, People's Podcast. And then if you want to find Anthony, probably talking about Animal Crossing, he's on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
Check my IG stories. They're all fun there.
And then you can find me probably talking about coffee and Ghost Coffee Shop
right.
on Twitter and Instagram. So thank you guys so much for everything. You guys are absolute rock stars. Thank you for staying inside, and I hope you guys are staying safe. And until next time, don't go with your friend to a southern French farmhouse.
Yeah, or in Victorville so you don't run into Old Man Kemper.
That's also true.
Yeah.
All right, bye guys.
Peace.